Namaste to all the listeners. Welcome to another round of discussion on a very interesting topic, which I'm excited about to listen to from our guest, Mr. Abhivardhan. As you all know, he is an international relations and tech policy researcher. Most welcome, Abhi. I think it's been more than a year we recorded our podcast.
Certainly, and it's a pleasure to be in your podcast. I think we have had some interesting discussions in the past, and I really look forward to delve into some of the, topics and issues which we could cover today.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Abhi. So, to start with this episode, Abhi, honestly, I tried researching a lot on the cultures of UP and the variety it represents in the current state boundaries, basically. However, the material is too less, on the internet, unfortunately. So, so as we have you today to dissect this for our listeners, so that they can learn that, UP as a state has much, much to offer and is a diverse land, So let me, just begin. You can just provide a very short snippet on how did the ancient UP look like, how it began, basically.
So if we give a simple understanding of how ancient UP could have been, of course, we can go to the history of the Indus Valley Civilization, the history of the Gupta Empire. And, that's a great reference point. Even the history of Pushyabhuti dynasty under Raja Harshvardhan, because what we call as Uttar Pradesh and what we know as Madhya Pradesh as two separate states. And, even if we had some parts of complete Haryana and some parts of Rajasthan and what we call as New Delhi these days, if we add all of those together, the sangam of them, or let us say the confluence of them, the combination of them, explains us the whole history of the North Indian belt of India, right? I mean, Arjun Singh Kadian has written a brilliant book on the history of Haryana, the land of gods. And if people read that book, they would also get an understanding that, let's just start with Haryana a little bit and let's get to UP. The word Haryana itself signifies, Haryana, which is to say the ghar of Hari, the ghar of Lord Vishnu, the home of Lord Vishnu. So Uttar Pradesh itself is a very colonial term, because it is obviously a conjugation of the term North Provinces, which was formed in 1937. And Madhya Pradesh is said just, I mean, it's also a bit of a colonial term, but I'm not saying that these are bad terms. These are just terms in a very Sarkari sense, because Madhya Pradesh means central state, right? Okay. So, if there were no Telangana, then we would have called in the British the Hyderabad state. Like that, we had the United Provinces and the Madhya Pradesh itself. Now, the United Provinces and the Uttar Pradesh as we know it. So, obviously, a lot of UP, a lot of MP, together when we say there are certain regions like the Vindhyas and so forth. And the connection that they have together is, of course, dates back to the prehistorical times and the Indus Valley times, wherein the culmination of a lot of things from the chariot wheels to certain new practices of hunting and otherwise. The regions, parts of UP have had always their share. Another way to look at it is a very important work known as Dashrajna, which is the Battle of Ten Kings, which also refers to, the North Indian belt so far. Now, and the reason why Dashrajna is important is because in the Battle of Ten Kings, it's kind of like contemporaneous, or let us say analogical, if not comparable, to what we know as the concert of Vienna, where we know that, European kingdoms, European royal kingdoms came together and they created their own common charter, kind of like the United Nations thing. But in the ancient times, the way the three, I'm not sure about the fourth Veda here, I'm not clear about it, but at least for the three Vedas, I'm clear that, the unison of 10 kings, when Sudas defeated them, the rest of them, the three Vedas were categorically accepted in the whole milieu. It ranges up to Iran and the right side, we can go to the former Indochina, which is known as ASEAN. So we can say in that sense that the whole so-called South Asian region, at least from the northern end, the whole Battle of Ten Kings encapsulates the history of UP, at least in that ancient pretext as to what it was.
Yes.
The Gupta Empire. Yeah, thank you. And the Gupta Empire is also an interesting example. For example, The city of Prayagraj has an area known as Prayag, which of course has the area of Triveni and Pratishthanpur, now known as Jhusi. Ironically, we know that the Magh Mela and the Kumbh Mela, which happens, at the banks of Ganga and Yamuna, which we know as Sangam and togetherness, Pratishthanpur, which is now known as Jhusi, is the place where Ila, the daughter of Manu, the same Manu from the Manusmriti, had founded that city. Hasti had founded Hastinapur, and Ila had founded Pratishthanpur, which is Jhusi. Now, and that is deeply connected to Prayag, right? So this is also a way to associate the history of UP, that it has always been a prosperous place. Of course, the tropical vegetation has been a main factor because we have had this throughout the country, I mean, including the south. But the tropical vegetation of Uttar Pradesh is special because this region has had and still has the most arable and fertile land across the country, which is why great population, which is why we have a capacity to grow crops, which includes the most common three crops, which is to say, number one, of course, your wheat, number two, rice, and number three, of course, the other variants. So understandably, that's in a nutshell, I would say, how we should understand the history of UP and its cultures. And when we associate in a more religious sense, then of course the tradition of Ramayana itself ranges in the other region of UP, which is to say Ayodhya, Saket, Lucknow, and all those places. Incidentally, people just think that when it comes to the culture of Ram and Ramayana, it's all about just a few places like,
Ayodhya, I mean,
Ayodhya.
say
Yeah.
Panchvati
But
in downtown.
yeah. Yeah. But even Lucknow has a contribution, right? I mean, we just can't just ignore that point. So, so it's not just the city of Nawabs, it's also a place where we have had a shared history. Yes, of course, Lucknow is an economic center more than being a cultural center, but
Correct. So, before, I plan to go down from west to east, basically, and east is quite prevalent, as you said, as you explained just right now. So, what does the prevalent of Braj culture, when we call a Braj Kshetra starting from, you can say, I mean, Agra Noida belt, or let's say, I mean, before Agra as well, Morena, Dholpur. And then it goes till, till Rajasthan, basically Bharatpur, Kota, and then deep Rajasthan, basically, let's talk about Bikaner, basically at the border. So what does this represent? The Krishna Bhakti, basically, it's quite prevalent in the West. Why is that? What sense do you make out of it? And do we have any sort of evidence as to why it has happened? And it's currently increasing a lot, honestly speaking.
Yeah, sorry. Could you be a little bit more specific on, your understanding per se?
Yeah, so basically, if you see, you had this Braj Bhasha, which is usually spoken in regions like Morena, Dholpur, Agra, Mathura, that way. And then if you go further to the west, till Rajasthan, you see that suddenly the Krishna Bhakti has played a very important role. You had kings, basically. Like, for example, you had a kingdom of Bharatpur, where also sort of worship Krishna. You had many kingdoms in small kingdoms in Rajasthan, where the supreme deity, which they worship, also along with the goddesses, the Krishna Bhakti was sort of prevalent. So what does I mean what explained this phenomena in the western region of UP?
Well, I think if we look at the distribution, it ranges, to even places like, Hathras, Firozabad, Auraiya, Eta, Farukhabad, Kasganj, Badaun, all these places. And even in Madhya Pradesh, we have places like Gwalior, Shivpuri, Morena, where we, see this trend. If we go to Ujjain, then of course Mahakal and its cultural presence and reminiscence is important. And that's definitely the case. So when we look at it, I think it is of course a sense of movement, because there were a sense, because in all these regions we had poets like Mirabai, Kabir, and all those. I mean, not Kabir exactly, but a Mirabai and Sur Das and others. And even some Punjabi literature had some inspiration, of sorts in those times. So that's a different thing altogether. And one more aspect is we see is that, since we are referring to Krishna, a lot of literature, a lot of poetic literature, not prose necessarily, has been written in the context of, if we say those who have a female viewpoint, right? So that's something which is very interesting. So I think it's an interesting trend per se. I mean, it's usually hard to decipher, but I think it's a regional, it's a regional curve. Because if we go from Awadh and all, we see, the whole trend of Ram Bhakti, and that transcends in the most beautiful ways. We can say that it goes from Himachal and then goes to Uttarakhand, and then it goes to Uttar Pradesh, and then it goes, sorry, Awadh, and then it goes to Purvanchal. So that's also a very beautiful way to look at it. So I think it's an interesting oscillating trend. But I think I would say that, perspectives have emerged in this sense, and that's a very beautiful phenomenon to look forward to. Yeah.
I mean, it sort of creates separates East from the West, UP basically, where the Ram Bhakti is prevalent, and there's a place where Krishna Bhakti is sort of more prevalent. So moving forward, as you're talking about, Awadh region becoming a core center with respect to Ramayana, basically. So what does it, I mean, what is unique in the Awadh? Why, such fascination with Ramayana and with the Lord Ram, this region had. I mean, I remember during my early days of travel, I traveled to Chitrakoot, and surprisingly, you have Chitrakoot in UP as well, and Chitrakoot in MP as well. And that region is sort of divided by the border, basically. So there I found again a very interesting phenomena of Ram Bhakti, where people are totally seeped into his worship. And there are a lot of important places in Chitrakoot as well, where during his Vanvas, he sort of spent certain time in Chitrakoot, and then moved further south, in his journey, basically. So again, I just want to put light on this Awadhi culture, the language, the unique language, which came from that region.
So when we look at the Awadhi culture, of course, it's a kind of a confluence which is unique to it, but it's more of, I would say, a hospitable aspect of feeling, because when we look at when we look at association with Ramayana, I think the one beautiful aspect is that Ram Bhakti instills a sense of, a sense of stability and prosperity together, which is associated with Deepavali, Dev Deepavali, and all the festivals we have. So Awadhi culture, and I mean, it's nothing to juxtapose, but kind of even when Kathak and other cultural aspects were grooming up in Awadh and Purvanchal, so to speak, Awadh always has been a place for, whether it is the Nawabs, or whether it is our prince, Hindu princes in Balrampur or otherwise, who have promoted the culture in a very, I would say, comforting and prosperity aspect, that, Ram means prosperity. Now, of course, people make rumored arguments that, okay, fine, the North Indian history have, of course, has been, a lot of North India has been subject to invasions for a long time, right? We know that since the 7th century and so on. And it's not like a linear curve that every time just invasions have only happened, retaliations have also happened. And I think Sanjeev Sanyal has described about this very beautifully. So a lot of misconception has been that, oh, Ayodhya is not a stable place and there's no prosperity. But in fact, it's not true because Lucknow and Ayodhya share this aspect of culture that we represent Ram Bhakti and, you know, aspects, cultural elements associated in a much, I would say, in an aspect to focus on not only on prosperity, but I would say cultural evolutions, which is exactly, I think, what Awadh represents, because Awadh is about what we call as the Nazakat, not all what we call as the way of, you know, life in many ways. So, I mean, if somebody says, for example, if somebody says, what's the difference between American and European cultures? Well, the best difference is that while a lot of liberal and all those aspects are similar, European cultures focus on staying still and having a way of life, like in Italy or France, while in America, it's always a hardcore capitalist culture. So you see the difference, right? So the
Right.
whole pan-Indo-European culture has been like this, but of course, there are divergences and beauties. With North India, despite the series of violence and despite the series of invasions and everything, Awadh has been a beacon of prosperity always, including Kanpur, including Lucknow. Ayodhya is a different case altogether. It's a cultural abode. It's not been an economic abode. I don't see any historical aspect on it, nor I'm a historian, so I'm not claiming anything. But for
Right.
Awadh overall, it's always been a symbol of prosperity and a sense of aestheticization, a sense of beauty, a sense of focusing on those aspects, which is why Itre in Lucknow is very famous, which is why the food of, you know, Awadhi region itself in Uttar Pradesh is very, I would say, it's, you know, they are considered one of the most also, you know, let us say, I can't have the word right now. I mean, it's not exactly royal or something. It's like, so Awadh delicacies or Awadh food, as we know
Odi,
it.
very Odi,
Yeah.
like connected with the roots, basically. If I can add.
It's connected with the roots, but it's more comfort based in a
Okay.
more aspect of way of life, that you lived Awadhi way of life. You
Got.
know, so you can feel that in Awadhi cities and towns, including Lucknow. Ayodhya will reach there, but it needs a very different wave of prosperity because the Ayodhya we see right now is a very small region. It needs new township and all. The Yogi government is trying, but political and in infrastructure change is not going to have cultural impact directly. So let's see what happens after the temple is renovated and all. That's a different story altogether. So yeah.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I mean, before moving further, you know, I just want you to explain a bit more about this phenomenon of worshipping Ram in Awadh. You know, just a bit focus on why it sort of happened. I mean, what were the reasons that, you know, the region became synonymous with the worship of Lord Ram? In the current generation, you know, which we are living in.
So, if we talk about the current generation, worshipping Lord Ram has a lot to do with the whole narrative of Ramayana in the beautiful sense. And I think if we see that even Delhi has a version of it, but the fact is, and I'll give a simple example of this generation, or let us say the 30 to 35 years of Narasimha Rao's economic reforms, that time from Narasimha Rao to Modi. So, see, what happened was in the 1990s, you know, the songs of Hanuman Chalisa and all those bhajans and aartis by T series were a thing, right? In the Hindi heartland. Everybody plays them. Even in the south, even in the south, I know in Telangana, Tamil Nadu, people love the Hanuman Chalisa version by, you know, published by T series. Okay. That itself is so holistic, right? I know it for the matter of fact because I've been to the south and I know that people love it. While the Hanuman Chalisa in the south, of course, have been sung by so many legends, including M. Subbulakshmi and others. But the Subbulakshmi version has always been a distinct one, which is culturally popular, right?
Yes.
So when we look at Delhi and UP together, the thing is with the Delhi thing, of course, Delhi was a center of prosperity from the 1990s because the capital of India, that's how the, you know, NCR was formed. You know, it was a bipartisan and multi-partisan consensus that, you know what, Delhi NCR as a region has to be developed. That's how Gurugram came to be in the 1990s. In Lucknow, we saw the Gomti Nagars and Alam Bags growing up. In West UP, we saw Noida growing up. So the Ram culture, when we look at the present times, I will not directly say it is, of course, related to the Ram Janma Bhoomi movement, because of course that is one thing to do, that is a political thing, but beyond that also it had a contribution to mobilize people. But even beyond that, even beyond Ram Janma Bhoomi movement and the whole Babri issue, I think the Uttar Pradesh has always had its own confluence towards the Vaishnav Mat in a very concerted sense. For example, people forget that in Lucknow itself, while there are a lot of temples in certain places which are small enough, which might be ancient, might not be ancient, but kind of a knockoff to continue the ancient tradition of a particular deity. We have had Neem Karoli Baba, who established the Hanuman Setu Mandir in Lucknow, one of the most prosperous and beautiful places, and that kept intact the Avadhi culture, the Ram Hanuman culture and tradition and bhakti. And that is something which has been a beautiful aspect of Uttar Pradesh. Even in Varanasi, even in Prayagraj, you will find those places where Hanuman is worshipped very diligently. And Hanuman Bhakti has its own cult in Purvanchal also. Okay. It's not just Shiv Bhakti. Shiv Bhakti is in Kashi Vishwanath, and we revere that. We have Kal Bhairav, we revere that. But we equally revere, or equitably revere, not say equally, there's no equality in this. You know, person can worship. But let us say we equitably revere, you know, Ram and his and Ram and Hanuman in various forms. So I think the Ram Bhakti plane itself is very diverse. Chitrakoot, you rightly pointed out, Chitrakoot of course is a place, no doubt about it. And even in Vindhyavasini, which is near Varanasi, you know, we have the Vindhyavasini temple, which of course the Home Minister has just declared already that you know, a
Oh, no.
corridor will be formed for that temple, like the Kashi Vishwanath temple, which is a great idea. I mean, Vindhyachal literally is a village, so it needs that. That's great. I mean, but of course, tourism alone won't help. But getting on the main point, yeah, it's always been there. Even in Delhi, it has been there always. But
Yes.
because a lot of people from Uttar Pradesh, especially West and East UP, went to Delhi to have their livelihood and everything. But the difference and the distinction has been that the Delhi aspect has been more of a existential and satisfying aspect that, yeah, we have a sense of a cultural thing at a liminal level, at the level of the crust, which we associate with Ram and Hanuman Bhakti. But Uttar Pradesh is literally the land of Ram and Hanuman, like literally the place where we associate in a more deeper sense. And Delhi is like a more urban place, and you know, a lot of dissociation and a lot of things. So I think that's how it has been. But I think the fact is, of course, that you know, the Avadhi way of life and Ram Hanuman Bhakti correlate with each other in the beautiful ways, where we associate Hanuman with the way of life. And I can tell you so many interesting examples, whether it is food or anything. But even in terms of worshipping, a lot of people, you know, make tattoos of Ram and Hanuman, and they associate in that sense also as a way of life. So I think that's how we can understand when it comes to this generation. That beyond the movement, of course, always it has been there, and the youth always sensed a feel of association with Ram and Hanuman in certain belts of UP, from Purvanchal when it comes to Chitrakoot, Prayagraj, Varanasi, and then
Right.
it goes to Awadh for sure. So that's definitely ha been the case. Yeah.
Interesting. Thank you for throwing this important light, you know. So what do you make a sense out of language called Bundeli? No, it's in Bundelkhand area basically. So is it a culture, or it's just restricted to the language? The unique language got developed, and now people are well versed with the language. They are comfortable with conversing in Bundeli, or does Bundelkhand itself, or that whole region itself, has a unique culture of its own, which I think, I, me being just a sort of, let's say a layman, looking from the sidelines, I see Bundelkhand as an area which sort of, which is yet to become prosperous, which is yet to be, sort of developed. In a strict sense. So how do you, what's your opinion on that? What's your study, says about Bundelkhand and Bundeli culture as a whole?
All right. So Bundelkhand refers to southern UP and most of Madhya Pradesh and some parts of Rajasthan, if necessary, maybe southeastern Rajasthan, if we say. Now, when it comes to Bundelkhand, well, a lot, it is of course a place which has to be prosperous because that is something which is, you know, long needed because of course population and everything. And I think there's a lot of potential in Madhya Pradesh as a state to do so. But if we look at the history per se, I think we can still associate it with parts of Indus Valley when it comes to places like Khajuraho and others. And there have been a set of clans. For example, you know, the Rajputana has been there in Rajasthan forever. It is the identity of Rajasthan, the majority identity of Rajasthan. It is what it is, the Marwaris and the Rajputs.
Right.
Likewise, we have had the Bundelas and the Chandelas, and I think that they are a Kshatriya clan who have had their presence in the region for, I don't know, centuries. I mean, people claim that the origins have been in the 9th century or the 12th century AD, but I think they have been there for a long time as a Kshatriya clan. So this is of course a factor that we associate with the North Indian states, that of course a set of Kshatriya clans have had their presence and culture for centuries. For example, Rajputanas and Marwadis, or you know, we have the Sikh community, of course, in Punjab, then of course, you know, some parts in Rajasthan we have discussed already, and then of course it goes to West UP and then Bundelkhand. So that's definitely been there. And people also claim that they have been, you know, sometimes ruled by Rajputs also, which is of course a connection between Madhya Pradesh and Rajasthan. I mean, if we associate you know, the political connection, then of course the guy who comes into our mind is Jyotiraditya Scindia, who is from Madhya Pradesh and Rajasthan at the same time. The royal princes, the princely states have also been there in Rajasthan and Madhya Pradesh. So of course the connection is there with Bundelkhand. When it comes to prosperity quotient, I think the problem is same as what's happening in UP, that it will take time to make things happen. And if, you know, we are discussing on that, that's a different topic altogether. But yeah, I'm sure, I hope this kind of answers your question.
Yes, definitely, definitely. So one interesting aspect is that, if you remember, as we're talking about the cultures, and culture is defined by the boundaries as well, of a particular region. So there was call, if I remember, during Mayawati's rule, during Mayawati's time, that, there has to be a division of UP into three or four states. Such a large state is cannot be governed efficiently. And I think people also sort of thought in the same fashion, and they were sort of supportive with this idea, but this was not carried forward, somehow, And then with the new government of BJP, coming in, we had two or three, deputy CMs, sort of along with the CM handling the state. I'm sorry, I'm a bit diverging with the topic, but I just want to know. Do you think that this could have been made a difference in sort of, you can say, defining the culture of different regions of UP, and sort of, could have made it more sanctified, made it more permanent in those regions? What's your observation on this? Just a short view on this.
So regional aspirations matter because without them, how it would be possible to reinvigorate a sense of culture? Because both UP and Bihar have had their own share of, you know, conflict economies, and you know, even after partition and independence, as we call them, we know that, you know, there has been a slew of Bahubalis and mafias which have affected UP and Bihar. Madhya Pradesh also have had their share, but again, Madhya Pradesh also has had a rule of Shivraj Singh Chauhan and those kind of politicians who actually protected Madhya Pradesh from that. I mean, of course, not in an ideal sense, but in a lot sense, because Madhya Pradesh had an issue of Naxalwad, which is to say Naxalites and all, which extended to today's Chhattisgarh and all. So politically speaking, well, division of Uttar Pradesh is inevitable because one day it has to happen, considering the big state that it is. But yeah, because of the fiscal issues and economic issues. But Will it happen quickly? Well, I don't think so, because it doesn't allow in a political sense. And second, it's Uttar Pradesh, if it has to be even divided, then it has to become a prosperous state. So Mayawati's proposal was not completely unjustified. The only problem was that UP is still a poor state. Just because some so-called investment numbers have come up with the UP Invest Summit doesn't mean that, the per capita income of Purvanchal has gone up. It doesn't mean that. And okay, Lucknow is the only city I know in Uttar Pradesh which has all the facilities as Noida has. They have an international airport, they have a metro, they have a visa application center. Then, of course, at a lower tier level, you have a very good bus service. And then you have, of course, a lot of hospitals and educational institutions. So, yeah, Lucknow is that one institution which we can compare to Noida in certain aspects. But
Right.
beyond Lucknow and Meerut and Noida and that whole Greater Noida and Ghaziabad area, I mean, rest of the UP is still not doing well. I mean, it's still like a per capita income issue. So, dividing UP could only be possible then when you have prosperity, when you have enough industries coming up. Some industry plants at a very minute level in Mathura or Prayagraj alone won't help. You have to do it at every single district in certain ways, right? But then another way it could be taken up is that UP, because UP is a very artificial state. I mean, if we know historically, it has been Awadh and Purvanchal. We know because of the cultural connection, the people say that it's Purvanchal region, but the British always added Awadh and Agra and Allahabad per se, residency and all those things.
Okay.
So if we look at Uttar Pradesh, of course it could be more like a state, but more like a Delhi NCR kind of a thing, where Lucknow is the central city, most prosperous city, and the rest of the city is also growing with Lucknow, kind of like how it happened in Delhi NCR, that Gurgaon developed because of Delhi. We have the Indira Gandhi International Airport in Gurgaon, which is of course in Delhi Aerocity, which is Delhi and Gurgaon at the same time. So Uttar Pradesh could also be that kind of a state, and we don't need to divide it. So that's my second point. That first, of course, Mayawati is right. You need to divide, but then you need to have economic prosperity for fiscal reasons and many other things. And second point is, of course, this, that yes, you don't need to divide. You just create a UPCR, which is already happening, the UP Capital Region. Which is also a better idea because, anyways, UP is an artificial concept, not the belt, not the specific regions. You get my point. So it could be like a UP could be like a vassal state for prosperity, but for cultures, I think division is not the solution. If you're referring to whether dividing states would help, well, it would bring things to ruin because then regulation, law and order, all of those things come into account. And I'm not sure that the police in Purvanchal is as active as the police in West UP or Awadh, right? So that is also a political problem with the police and all those things. So division, if leads to cultural renaissance in UP, I disagree. I've been asked this question by some other friend of mine as well, and I said the same thing. I'll say the same thing again. But economic prosperity, if achieved through the UPCR itself by giving autonomy, I think that's a better way. But I think we can discuss a little bit about the cultural policy of UP government and UP itself, if you wish to, but yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'll take the note of that, the cultural policy of the current UP government. But I want you to diverge on that before this question of mine. Let's talk about Nath Sampradaya, which has a Gorakhpur as its seat. Now, internet, I found this very interesting thing that Nath Sampradaya is sort of a different culture itself. It has its own adherence and all, They sort of seeing it as in a very you can say in a very shell view, basically dissecting it from the broader cultural aspects of the region. So what sense do you make out of Nath Sampradaya? And I mean, as you know, we currently have a chief minister who is himself adherent of the Nath Sampradaya culture, and he himself comes from the core center of this beautiful culture.
Right, so the Nath Sampradaya ranges up to Nepal, which is Kathmandu, Lumbini, and all those places.
Oh.
And parts of Gorakhpur, parts of Varanasi, parts of Prayagraj and Buddhism, well, not related, sorry. But Varanasi, Gorakhpur, yes. Varanasi, Gorakhpur definitely have been related to both Nath cultures and Hinduism and of course, the Buddhist culture, which ranges up to Nepal, you know. So the Nepalese, of course, have had, or the Nepali people, of course, have had ties with us. Now, some, of course, claim that, you know, the Matsyendra and the Goraksha culture, or the aspects of them, which formed the Nath Sampradaya, kind of, you know, because the references come from there, came from the Deccan, which is to say, you know, today's Hyderabad, today's Telangana, today's Andhra. That is what it is claimed, which, I mean, honestly speaking, even when we look at the Sangam literature and the Sangam tradition, when we say Sangam tradition, it refers to a confluence of northern and southern people of India, or the Indian subcontinent in the historical sense, right? I mean, people from the south have always been going to, you know, for pilgrimages to Chitrakoot, Varanasi, Prayagraj, and that has always been the thing. So I think it's something which has always been there. It's distinct, and there's also a reference to the Vijayanagar Empire, which we could try to trace through, because there are certain artworks and things. But even then, you know, the confluence which we see of the Nath Sampradaya from, you know, historical references to Deccan, this reminds me of how the Marathwada culture, or let us say the Marathi culture, Marathwada is a subset of Marathi, the Marathi culture, which is to say Shivaji and everything related to the Maratha Empire. The kind of revivalism under Hindavi Swaraj, which Shivaji and his successors did, actually inspired a lot of people in the south, especially in Vijayanagar and otherwise, you know, the Kannada Tamil states and otherwise, to, you know, go for cultural revivalism, which is something very important, because this is something even Adi Shankaracharya has done. A lot of reformers in Hinduism have done it. So cultural revivalism, cultural syncretism, which is to say connecting it in a beautiful way, reviving it, keeping it intact, is something which we can also find in the Nath Sampradaya. And of course, you know, references to the Maratha Empire and the whole cultural and religious contributions, of course, you know, associate. So I think that could answer your question, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It answers my question. Again, I have to again ask another question. And this is very important, you know, before going on to, you know, how the cultural policy of this government is working. So, do you agree that, you know, UP is sort of a birthplace of this syncretic culture of Ganga Jamuni Tehzeeb? You know, like, honestly speaking, for me, this whole syncretic culture of Indo-Islamic, this thing, for me, it's an exception, but not a rule, as being propounded by the Marxist historians, you know, or some political circles, where they sort of focus more on the syncretic culture, you know, saying that it's sort of a permanent thing, it bloomed naturally here, and, you know, but for it is sort of, let's say, a friendship of convenience, an exception. In, you know, so what do you make out of it? I just want to know your view on.
I'll be bluntly honest. I'll be bluntly honest.
Sure, please.
For example, of course, if you look at Lucknow's Nawabs, I'm not going to claim that every single Mughal ruler was perfect and every single Mughal or Nawabi ruler was, you know, benevolent, because it wasn't the case. Of course, we know how it's written in Aine Akbari, it is written in, you know, all the Mughaliya texts, not some other texts, of Mughaliya texts by, you know, the people who were in the Darbar of Akbar, Jahangir, and others, as to how Mughals have behaved. Now, let's just keep that aside and understand. So, Ganga Jamuni Tehzeeb, as we knew in the Nawabi era and the Mughal times, kind of was a colonial creation, because there were two waves of colonization in India. Of course, British colonization, which is European colonization, including French, Portuguese, and Dutch colonization. And the second one, of course, is, I would say, Persian Arabic colonization. Because, I mean, Islamic, yes, but then by that logic, the British were also doing it under Protestant or liberal Christianity. So, I mean, yeah, it is, you can say that ideologically, religiously, but we are not getting into that territory. It doesn't make sense. So let's talk about regions instead of that. So, yeah. The Persian and Arabic and Turkic coloniality, which came from the Mongols and all that. Of course, the influence was there. But the Ganga Jamuni Tehzeeb, of course, was a product of it. Let's just face it. It was a product of it, right? I mean, there's nothing bad or good or perfect about it. It was, because, for example, when the name of Allahabad was changed to Prayagraj, a lot of residents in Allahabad, now Prayagraj, had said that we never knew a name called Prayagraj, and I understand why did they say that.
Why this happened?
They say that because geographically, Prayag starts from the Balsan Chauraha in Allahabad, which is the Prayag district itself. So Allahabad, as they say, has always been a place under Akbar, because he started under some, I think maybe Dinne-Ilahi or something like that, right? And so reclaiming it as Prayagraj for them might be a bit weird or inappropriate. But in my view, I think it's not inappropriate because, again, Allahabad or Allahabas, as we say, some historians and Allahabad University claim, has been a colonial product. So reclaiming a name called Prayagraj is not inappropriate because that is something which is a reasonable claim to make. So Ganga Jamuni Tehzeeb, of course, has certain things which kind of also stretch to Gomti, which is to say Lucknow, which is to say the Nawabi culture, right? If you go to Aminabad or you go to, not Hazratganj is a more cosmopolitan place now, but Aminabad and Lal Bagh and Chowk and all that area, Imanara. So, I think the problem is that people think that just because Ganga Jamuni Tehzeeb has happened, it is something which is a very universalized thing which could apply everywhere, which is again a historical phenomenon despite conquests and enmity and everything. And it just happened there were some people in good faith across faiths who wanted to have a sense of culture. But it does not mean that everyone wanted to have the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's not my point. It's an exception, not a rule.
Because if that's the case, then the claim is that Lucknow only has a Nawabi culture. But people forget the fact that people like Wajid Ali Shah actually learnt a lot from the Upanishads and had been a person who appreciated Kathak. Now, these facts are also true. It does not mean it justifies all the horrific invasions and everything. It just simply means that it is what it is. So the Ganga Jamuni Tehzeeb is dead because, first of all, I don't think anyone who wanted to protect it as poets and so-called artisans have ever protected it in the modern era, because it turns out that most of them, sadly, from Prayagraj, which is a very unfortunate place now. All of those people have been just some political hecklers. They have not contributed anything to the so-called culture per se. So they have not contributed to the Purvanchali dialect, which they completely forget. The so-called Allahabadi dialect, which they had in old Allahabad, which is your Loknath and all that place. Loknath is known for the Loknath Temple of Lordship. So I think it's a sense of ignorance. People think Ganga Jamuni Tehzeeb is a catchphrase. Just use it everywhere to suit your political narrative, but nobody understands what it is. So I'm saying that yes, Allahabad was a colonial construct of the Mughals. It was not because Prayag was a separate place created by the Gupta Empire, or maybe before, right? And even if we keep a dissection of old Allahabad, which is to say starting from, the place where parade ground begins, from where the Sangam region begins, all the people who come from the Magh Mela and all tourists and sadhus, they don't go to main Allahabad. They go to, of course, they go to through bus stand and all, they can go, but if they take a roadways trip, then they can go directly through the parade ground. They have to go to the premises of Sangam, Yamuna, and Ganga. But if we cut off parade ground from the old Allahabad, which is Allahabad High Court, Allahabad University, Katra, all that place, then that old Allahabad is a Mughal construct, let us say. But again, it's a British construct also, because Allahabad was what exactly Noida and Delhi are today in the British era, right? I think it had India's earliest international airport before Nehru became the interim prime minister in 1946. So Bamroli was an international airport. Of course, that is, So Bamroli, Allahabad's airport was actually an international airport. International flights used to happen, in Allahabad and Calcutta, because Calcutta residency and Allahabad, of course. But of course, the after partition, that relevance went to Kanpur, because Kanpur in the colonial times was always more, industrially viable than Allahabad, because sadly Allahabad always has been a place of political activism and nothing else. I mean, yeah, there have been a lot of literature people as well, like Soumitra Nandan Pant and all, but I mean, today's Prayagraj is just for the namesake of it. There's no cultural renaissance there. I mean, Lucknow at least has it, but Varanasi has it very well, but not Prayagraj. So that's the, I think, sorry for the elaboration, but I hope that answers Ganga Jamuni Tehzeeb. So yeah.
Not at all. This is beautifully explained, actually, and I really wanted to focus on this aspect as well, because there is a lot of illusion based on this whole Ganga Jamuni Tehzeeb sort of, and we have our own, we have people who sort of, keep pushing this envelope again and again and again and again, where the evidence, of course, is totally different. Okay, so moving forward, as you said, this government, the current Yogi government in UP, has this cultural policy. So, and honestly speaking, I've heard this for the first time. I mean, sorry for my ignorance, but yeah. So what is it? It's very interesting, actually. What sort of cultural policy they have got, and are they doing anything to protect the unique, the discussion which we had on the unique cultures, unique languages of UP? Are they doing something to protect it, to sort of, let's say, to create a renaissance in UP culturally or specifically?
Yeah, I will give a shocking answer which might kind of shock the viewers, and I'm not doing it to make people angry, but the answer is no. Because what they're now doing is more in the realm of tourism and infrastructure and connectivity, which I understand that a government can do much better. But I don't think they're contributing anything to the cultural aspect at all. Because the problem is, for example, yes, we need all those corridors and key temples. We need them urgently. That's a great thing. I mean, a lot of things which this government did in the first term and they're doing in the second term are very obvious things. Nothing magical or nothing, significant. I mean, even the Ram Temple movement is a different thing altogether. But
So
And I'm going to call, count it as a North Indian effort and a Pan India effort and a central government and Supreme Court effort rather than a UP government effort, simply because the problem with the UP government is we see the evidence. For example, see, the problem is, as I told you, in Lucknow itself, there are places which have some ancient temples and places. Okay, then also there's a sense of cultural heritage which is all over the UP. I told you about several dialects which are lost in UP right now, which are just not caught up, right? They are not documented properly. People are not thinking about it.
Some
Further,
example,
if you see,
small.
for example, well, there are dialects in Purvanchal. Okay. There are folk songs and genres in Purvanchal. I am myself seeing people from Uttarakhand rejuvenating their cultures. There's a band called Pandavas. There's a group of singers, musicians who are preserving their culture, and the Uttarakhand government is trying to help them in certain way or not. I'm not sure. But I'll give you a simple example. Simplest example. So there was something called an Uttarakhand Mahotsav. It happened in Lucknow. Okay. I was in the Uttarakhand Mahotsav. It was a mela, basically, a fair. I went there. They had all the cultural things, from food to saris to apparel to everything they could give. And for all reasons, it was representative of the local people who wanted to make a living. And there were some beneficiaries of the Prime Minister's schemes and the chief ministerial schemes of Uttarakhand. Okay. So there were beneficiaries and people who were representing MSMEs, and they were doing pretty well. They were good cultural brands. And if a little push could be given to those nice people, I think they could do pretty well, at least in the North India, at least in Delhi NCR as a market. So the Uttarakhand Mahotsav was culturally better. Okay. But when it comes to Uttar Pradesh, there is no Uttar Pradesh Mahotsav or Lucknow Mahotsav, because there's a grudge that Lucknow Mahotsav is largely associated with the Nawabi culture. But again, that thing is just there. It's not necessarily colonial or something. It's just a part of it, but not everything, because you also have the Avadhi culture, which you have in Lucknow and Ayodhya, and it is your duty as the government to promote that. For example, they did one good thing, and they do these things, but they do it under the pressure of the central government.
Oh, okay.
In the Avadh Shilp Gram in Lucknow, newly built, beautiful building. Okay, beautiful building. I don't know who, which government built it, but I will say the UP government did it, so congratulations. Beautiful building. They did something called Hunar Haat, in which they featured people from all over Lucknow and Awadh, which includes Aminabad, which includes Gomti Nagar, which includes Alambagh, which includes Hazratganj, all those places. And we have all aspects of MSMEs which are coming, whether it's food, whether it is apparel, whether it is jewelry, whether it is anything. So the problem which happens is that the culture department or ministry doesn't take feedback from their own people. Their strategy on reviving culture is blank, because all they're focusing on is on the infrastructure and tourism part. Now,
Okay.
the point is, it might work for a place like Puducherry or Dadra or Nagar Haveli or Goa, because you have beaches and all those kind of places, or you have high-level pilgrimage places where people will inevitably come, like Varanasi or Vaishno Devi.
Right.
But even a place like Varanasi needs industry.
Right, absolutely. You can't.
Anyone can just go and have a Google map and look at the infrastructure of Varanasi. You can't have a metro inside the city at all, unless you just do some magic and you have some amazing political will from the bureaucrats that you have a metro inside, or any other sort of outer ring road. Maybe you can start from the, this is what I had proposed online sometime, that you can start a metro service in Varanasi, because a lot of tourists come from Lucknow and the airport, from the airport to Varanasi Cant Railway, which is a great thing to start with. But I think on infrastructure and development, I have no issues. I think this government is the best, and the UP government always, since Mayawati also, the development part when it comes to key infrastructure, which is whether it is highways, whether it is key institutions or buildings, the Uttar Pradesh government has been always perfect. That is something which can never be taken from them. I think it is a quite unique Uttar Pradesh achievement, because they have done it. But on cultural renaissance, I think the problem is, first, there is no political education on this. Akhilesh Yadav is equally uneducated on this. The current government's leadership, not the chief minister, I don't know about the chief minister, but current ruling party also, I don't think they're aware about, aspects of cultural renaissance. Because what happens in UP, I'll tell you, is that in the name of reviving literature or promoting literature, what kind of people are promoted as poets or authors? Let's just talk about them a little bit, okay?
Yeah, sure.
So this comes from the aspect to do some entertainment-based PR, which comes from the Hindi cinema and the whole T-series industry and the whole thing in Delhi.
Yeah.
And the problem is that all governments, this government just has stopped it,
Okay.
but a lot of politically motivated people who have had their own families and stuff have been writing some poems, and they have been peddling the same narrative without any contribution to culture or literature. Okay, I know a lot of people in Uttar Pradesh who are talented poets, but never go for a Mushaira or a Kavi Sammelan, because the Kavi Sammelans are so mediocre. You just don't have anyone in the Hindi literature aspect to even promote or have a beautiful sense of art.
It has
And
reduced
yeah, because yeah.
90s and all, or early 2000, it used to be a thing.
Yeah. And now they're a joke, and I'm saying on your platform, very honestly speaking, I know that people will say, oh, how does it matter? We have the Hindi cinema, we will have Pritam and Arijit Singh. Well, the point is, Arijit Singh is a Bangla, and I support him. And Pritam is also from Bengal. I have no issues with people in Mumbai. But boss, the Hindi heartland is Uttar Pradesh, largely, and my MP. So we have to talk about the people who are in the flair of literature, who want to do something. Right, everyone doesn't need to go to Delhi all the time. So I think the problem is, if you will not do it, then of course people will get discouraged. Of course, there are people like Maithili Thakur and Malini Awasthi and all those talented people who are exceptions, but I think we need more Maithili Thakurs from Varanasi or Prayagraj, I don't know. Or we need more Malini Awasthi from Lucknow, I don't know. Can't we have more artists of these sorts who are talented enough, who understand? Because I really like Maithili Thakur's works, especially her songs. I really like Malini Avasthi's bhajans. I really like, I really like. There's a professor, Dr. Balram Shukla. He's also from Uttar Pradesh. He was a professor in Delhi University. He was nominated as the head of the Swami Vivekananda Cultural Center in Iran, basically a cultural diplomat like Amish Tripathi. Yeah, and well, he's a professor of Sanskrit, Farsi, and Urdu, and Hindi, obviously. And he's a maestro of language sciences. Why don't we promote these kind of people more? But who does it? Not the UP government, the Union government, the Indian
Government.
Council of Cultural Relations. So the problem is, the central government has some intention. I'm not getting on the minister or particularly. That doesn't matter. The central government wants to do it, but the UP government is just not interested because they don't have any idea. At a local level, all these so-called Hindi Seva Sansthan and language science bodies, nothing is happening. The state of language sciences in, for example, even the best of the best, like Banaras Hindu University, BHU, is just terrible. There's no investment of language in anything, be it Urdu, Sanskrit, or Hindi, or any Indic language in Uttar Pradesh. So it's not like completely a breakdown, but it's like the whole criticism of Uttar Pradesh people was that because of the Mandal movement and the Babri issue and all the whole rise of mafias, these three factors, the political economy in UP was affected, which is to say violence and a sense of conflict was all across Purvanchal and UP. Okay, that was the fear, correct? And that was the reason why a lot of people, a lot of generation from which stalwarts like Murali Manohar Joshi came in, okay, the 70s and the 80s, he was a professor in Allahabad University, right? So a lot of those stalwarts came from Allahabad and all those places, those great central universities in UP. And that whole culture, that whole work culture, education culture was lost because of the conflict economy for 30 to 40 years. Okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Correct?
I agree with you, sir, on this.
Correct?
Seriously. Yeah. Yep.
Correct? And that's why people left UP? A lot of
Yes.
people? Correct? Now that is not being revived. And that's something which is not being pondered upon because either people are too much boomerish about their thoughts, they just don't wish to hear anyone, or they just think everything is about winning an election and politics. So people will say, okay, you have not won an election, how do you matter? I mean, sorry, that's not how things work. So except it but I would say one merit, I would say one thing in merit, that at least reviving a culture or literature in Uttar Pradesh would not be, affected by any caste-based politics in UP directly. In Bihar, while Nitish Kumar should be applauded for, keeping the Bihari culture, the Mithila Vasi culture, and the Bhojpuri culture alive,
Yes,
the
that is.
problem is the whole culture and literature board of Bihar is still very much connected to the caste politics and its dirt, which is again a problem for Nitish Kumar and the whole political landscape in Bihar to handle. But of course, that's not the case in UP because in Uttar Pradesh, an Uttar Pradesh ka local guy will first say, I'm an Indian. And then would think about whether I'm from Bandha or Purvanchal or anything else. I mean, yeah, they care about their regional identity, but they're Indian first. Definitely they care about.
They're not very fixated towards it.
Yeah.
And I think another aspect which I think is
Even
recently.
by the way, Biharis are also nationalists, no doubt about it. They are also patriots. But I'm just saying, that the difference is more,
Yes, definitely, definitely. I mean, they are Qatar nationalists, I would say. I mean, if I can use the word, again, in UP, it is not as fixated as it is in Bihar. And I think the other aspect, which sort of which may be, which we may be missing, is that recently, from, let's say, from the early 2010s, we in Bollywood, in the cinema industry, we had this lot of stories coming out of North India, the regions of North India, basically, especially UP. There are a lot of cinema which sort of they were which were basically shot in UP, and showed the, should I use the culture or should I use the way of living, how people live, basically, not culture, I think the way of living, they live, that sort of, exposed the citizens of UP a lot, you know, in a sense where they sort of became a bit modernish, I would say, with their thoughts, realizing that ultimately fixating with identity, you know, though I'm not saying it's not important, but in the larger scheme of things, it does not work. You know, it won't matter as such. What do you think on this? You know, the cinema, the Hindi cinema industry focusing on the UP region, and now, you know, as you say, as you know, this government, this Yogi government, has came up with the proposal of setting up a film industry, a film city in Noida region, sort of. You know, I mean, I'm about how it is progressing, but you know, it has get this connection, you know, which I can see sort of.
Well, I don't think they have an intent to have a film city in Noida. Although Noida has the infrastructure to do so. They have a place in Greater Noida, they can do it, but I don't know why don't they wish to do it. I think the problem is more that the Hindi cinema always has been a bit delusional. That is because of the economy and the kind of power structure in Hindi cinema. For
Good.
example, internally, even in certain discussions, all these Bollywood stars admit that there is no place called Bollywood in India. So why should we call it in a very, artificial sense? It is Hindi cinema, but it is also Marathi cinema. It is also Maharashtra ka cinema. It is a Mumbai cinema. So
Yes.
see, I mean, the Hindi cinema, we have to associate it with the partition history as well. Since Nehru and always, and all political parties are responsible for it, they have had a direct connection with associating their political narratives with the cinema. And this is something which has been always a thing. But the good thing which I'm seeing is that in the OTT side, now in the past 2 to 3 years, they have actually come up with some amazing shows with narratives on Uttar Pradesh, which I'm very happy to see. For
Okay.
example, Guns and Gulabs. You may not like Guns and Gulabs by Rajan DK by saying it could be stereotyping, but it's not stereotyping. It's just fantastic. It's just a work of art, like Quentin Tarantino's movies, or I don't know.
I loved it.
Guns and Gulabs was fantastic. Panchayat, Sachiv Ji, fantastic. I loved it. Both seasons. Third season, I'm awaiting.
Yes.
Dasvi was not a bad movie. It was good. Abhishek Bachchan. So I
Yes.
think it depends. In the OTT side, they're actually doing pretty well. The TVF is there, which is coming up with some good content on aspirants and startup people and all that stuff. Although I don't support anyone who prepares for UPSC because I think competitive exams are a waste of life. But I sympathize with their struggles, and I think TVF aspirants is a very good example of that Delhi UP ka, competitive exam culture and how people feel about it. So I think there's some good stories are coming up from Uttar Pradesh. Even funnily, Anurag Kashyap used to do that, but the problem was this guy completely went delusional after Gangs of Wasseypur and certain good films, thanks to what he did, and I don't wish to talk about it. So certainly, of course, there are certain filmmakers and people who were actually talented enough, okay, and they did their well for UP. I think even this reminds me of the film Guru, which was made by Mani Ratnam, Abhishek Bachchan and all. Very interesting. So I think people have started doing it in Hindi cinema. The problem was, of course, the way they represent, but I think that's changing because the market is changing. They always know that the Hindi heartland will always be their key market, whether it is the tier 2 cities or tier 3 cities, and Netflix, Amazon Prime, all of them know it. Okay, you have the market in Mumbai, but you definitely have a market in Delhi NCR and Uttar Pradesh. So you
This is
need that. So I think they're changing. If that's so. So I'm being very specific because see, everyone on Twitter criticizes the Hindi cinema for being this and that and that. And I think everyone is aware. I think your audience definitely is aware of that. So I wanted to be a more specific aspect. But yeah, on Noida Film City, actually they can do it. They have a mass media and journalism industry in Delhi NCR, which is connected to Faridabad and Gurugram and even
absolutely.
Noida and all. Republic TV and all those. So they have the media industry. They just need an entertainment industry. And I
Yeah.
don't think it's impossible. They can do it. I think it's a problem of intent because, I mean, who imagined that Mayawati could come up with the Buddha International Circuit for F1 racing? I mean, yeah, Akhilesh Yadav's government ruined it, but I think, I hope in 3 to 4 years or sometime, we actually see a real F1 race in Noida. I mean, it would be the first in India, and I would be so happy. I know that some people in the south and the east might be like, you know what, we should have had one in Chennai. But I'm like, okay, fine, you'll have the second one. The first one is in Uttar Pradesh. I am proud about that. But I think,
Yes.
it's a problem of imagination and intent. there has been meetings, and when people say that they, you know, there are ideological factions in favor of government or against government, I think that doesn't matter at all, because all of the political virtue signaling which actually these people in the entertainment industry do, they do it only for attention. Okay,
Well,
all they have, and all and otherwise even they have their other reasons, so it's better not to discuss their murky narrative of what they do all the time. Even journalists, okay, so they will anyways fall in line. It's just about the it's just for, it the balls is at the ball is at the court of the government. The government has to do it. The central government might support, but they have to do it. Yeah.
I absolutely agree with your points, Abhivadan. So, I mean, thank you so much. Thank you so much for, divulging so much information when it comes to the cultures and the dynamics of it, the how it is being played in contemporary times. It's delightful to listen to you, Abhi. So, just as a concluding thoughts, how exactly you feel about the cultural landscape of UP? Is it developing? I mean, do you have a very affirmative view of it, or a negative view of it, or it's a mixed bag sort of a thing, or do you think that we have is there any person rising in Uttar Pradesh, who could basically sense this anomaly in the state?
All right. So first of all, of course, thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh,
I could hopefully, I could hopefully, tell certain things which were not mainstreamed enough. So I'm glad I could do that. See, I'm not entirely pessimistic, because of course the tourism industry and the infrastructure part is going pretty well. So that's a very big boost. But will it help in cultural rejuvenation? Because we just think that merely creating temples will help. Well, see, the point is that definitely temples are associated with cultures of music and art, and that's been a historical ancient thing. We know that. But for that, the society needs to come forward. Castes and communities need to come forward. We just completely forget that point. Now, in a modern India, we would not directly expect that. So that's a different thing altogether. How communities specifically do and are able to do is a different matter. I'm not getting on that. But even in a modern context, I think it's possible by just giving a sense of mobility and a sense of encouragement, maybe some incentives that the government should try to indulge in cultural rejuvenation, which could be done by, promoting certain people in Uttar Pradesh who want to highlight their work, whether it is authors, poets, singers, artists of sorts. They have a UP culture portal for artists, but they have to try harder, maybe from a marketing and from an incubation upfront, if they can help these artists and people to promote their work. Because, see, I'll be very honest. The current CM wants to be the next Prime Minister of India, maybe after Modi or Dr. Jaishankar or anyone. Well, my favorite after Modi should be my Dr. Jaishankar, but that's my personal choice. But I'm saying whosoever is after the current Prime Minister, and somebody, if he wants to be the next Prime Minister, he has to learn from Gujarat, that the Gujaratis were encouraged by Modi to kind of, incentivize on certain economic aspects, And Uttar Pradesh needs a lot of push on that when it comes to culture. And if we do it as Uttar Pradesh people, I think the best part would be that you would not have to rely on a fellow UPIite to go to Mumbai all the time or Bengaluru all the time. They can do at home or in Lucknow or in any city in UP, and they can actually build it for the state. They have to think it in that way for cultural entrepreneurship. And it's not just art or entertainment or literature. I mean, what you can do in literature, the best you can do is have some festivals or some marketing campaigns or some support. But even beyond that, for other MSMEs of sorts, you need to think about it. Of course, one district local for vocal and one district policy, one district one product policy is there. In Indian Railways, they're trying it. But I don't think that's enough. That's more of a bureaucratic effort. They need something like a Startup India effort kind of a thing for cultural entrepreneurship, which is innovative and representing the Indian Uttar Pradeshi brand, which could be, in Bandra, in Prayagraj, in Bhadohi, and Chitrakoot and Mirzapur, anywhere. So if they do that, I think they will do. But I'm not entirely pessimistic. Having temples and rejuvenating temples is a great encouragement spiritually and maybe economically. But my caution is that if tourism is such a great heavenly bliss for Uttar Pradesh, then please explain me why did the Niti Aayog go to Allahabad, which is Prayagraj, Varanasi, and Gorakhpur to study their poverty and economic backsliding issues? Then
Right.
they should not have gone, right? The Niti Aayog should not have done a study. They did a study because they wanted to understand what's the problem in these cities, why they're not growing, why they don't have any industry. So
Yeah.
you need those things. Okay. So I think for cultural entrepreneurship, they need to have some people beyond bureaucrats, and they need to depoliticize it. No political influence should affect cultural entrepreneurship. No caste equations, no electoral politics. I think that way they can actually go for true cultural entrepreneurship, because we need industries in this state. It's a very big state, and it can be three to I don't know. It can be nearly, I mean, I'm not making a rhetoric, it can be nearly as prosperous as what Central Europe is right now. Except that Germany just stopped their prosperity because, of course, they stopped some manufacturing. So, yeah.
It's sad actually what is happening with Germany.
Yeah.
I second your thoughts, Abhivar. And I think a lot of people don't know that in Bihar, Nitish Kumar's rule has, as you said, he has focused on the cultural aspects of Bihar, and he has been successful in it. Especially if we have a bureaucrat who has this bent, who understands the cultural aspects of the region, I think the wonders can also be done through bureaucrats themselves. You don't need to have another sort of person, because I remember correctly that it was the principal secretary of Nitish Kumar's government who proposed the idea of setting up a Patna Museum. And Patna Museum in Bihar is one of the best museum ever made in this country. It showcases Bihar's culture, its history, its ancient medieval history beautifully. So I think I hope some sort of you can say rejuvenation, or you can say what's that word, basically reformation, happens in the bureaucratic setup, which I
Yeah.
hope he will do if he wins the 2024 elections. There is a bit of chatter on that aspect that bureaucracy may be overhauled in his next term if he wins the elections. So yeah, the as you said, we are hopeful about the cultural rejuvenation of not only UP but the whole country.
Yeah, hopefully, because once that happens, because bureaucrats are just not going to handle in UP, culture ministry don't care, and I don't think they're interested. And I'm being very decent on this. I'm being very lenient on them because I understand what the tourism ministry doesn't do anything. It's a central government. But yeah, the central government should definitely push the UP government on this, because I don't think the cultures in Uttar Pradesh, which have a second chance after a very good law and order situation finally, should just die out because some incompetent bureaucrats don't understand literature and cultural entrepreneurship. So, yeah, it was nice time talking to you, by the way. I'm sorry if I went long.
Oh no, not at all. In fact, I support longer podcasts, because it fleshes out the thoughts more, the views more actually. And thank you so much for speaking out, Abhi. And thank you for taking time, to speak on this, because this aspect is not spoken enough, in the media, on social media as well. So I hope this will start a bit of conversation, even if it's even if it's a handful of people. At least people should know that UP is not your typical, a ravaged land, which sort of some people want to highlight it. It's a beautiful place. It's got beautiful people, beautiful culture, and beautiful cuisine as well. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Abhi, for being a guest for today's episode.
Sure, it was a pleasure to, discuss with you.
Thank you. Thank you.